Countdown for blast off. X minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X minus 1, fire.
And welcome to another episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Edwards, and with me, of course, the Ronin to my Oni, Mr. Robert Lundgren. How you doing, bud?
Hello, hello. I'm getting visions of Samurai Jack right now, and I don't know why.
Oh, we're going to be talking about all manner of things on that topic, but in a little bit.
Okay.
Welcome to episode 36. I can't believe it's 36 already. It's nuts how they're flying by.
Yeah. We're getting close on 2 years, aren't we?
I mean, we're creeping up on it pretty quick.
July was our pilots, but those hardly count. But yeah, August, and it's by the time this comes out, it'll be March. So yeah.
Yeah, you go back to those pilots. That stings a little, doesn't it?
I don't want to do them over because they're an important part of the evolution. But on the other hand,
Maybe some things need to die out, go extinct. Extinction is a natural thing.
People still listen to it. I still see it pop up.
I makes you want to kind of just have an I'm sorry email ready to go.
Yeah, well, I wish we could reboot the first 8 episodes, but I don't want to go and re-record them.
We're certainly not the first podcast to have these pains, if you will.
I guess it's the first 10. Episode 8, I think, was the one that solidified. I don't know. Anyway, sorry.
Well, as always, we like to get our episode started with a wonderful thank you to our fantastic patrons over at Patreon. Without you, we couldn't keep this show on the air. Your small donations really go a long way to helping us with just the basic costs of the show and keeping everything running. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And in fact, we have a new patron to thank, don't we?
Yeah, with quite possibly the best name ever.
Yeah, Ninja Duck. That is epic.
So thank you, Ninja
and,
Duck.
And oddly topical.
I've never seen a Ninja Duck, have you?
No, I think that's the whole point of the ninja half of that.
Nice.
Well, and we also have, for folks over at our Patreon page, a brand new bonus.
Yeah, we recorded a mini-sode. Is that a good word? I don't know.
Sure. Sounds okay. Good to me.
Minnesota. Creatively
keeping up on Minnesota there.
Minnesota. Hey. So yeah, we got FMD P1. I was inverted over on the Patreon. Don't you know?
I don't know if that's accurate.
It's probably not. It's been a long time since I visited the family. But yeah, we've got an episode titled FMD P1, I Was Inverted, over on the Patreon. It is set to public, so anybody can go over there and give it a listen. But future installments over there will be for patrons only. And basically, the idea for the minisodes is just doing things that either timing-wise don't work out, because P1, by the time we would have gotten around to it, it probably would have been the middle of March by the time we started talking about what we're looking forward to in 2018, which is kind of dumb. So we're like, yeah, this is a good candidate for that. Or just things that are sort of outside of our normal sphere, like the plans for the Bright that keep getting more and more outlandish as we talk about them, so I hesitate to even bring them up.
I do want to do that. I think that I really, really do.
I
want
think
to do
Ninja
that.
Duck wants us to do that because he signed up for the premium package.
There you go.
So I think we kind of have to at this point.
Yeah, at this point, I do feel like we're obligated.
I'm getting. I listened to a few people who try to do riff tracks off the cuff and they're bad. So now I'm like, I got to watch the movie.
Oh, this could be a terrible experiment. Make no mistake.
No, I'm going to watch the movie again and write stuff down. I'm going to make a script.
Don't worry, I will completely pull the entire thing right out of thin air.
And that's the beauty. See, your off-the-cuff antics will mess with my delivery, and thus hilarity will ensue. And you can be the Deadwood, and I can be the Banana Man.
There you go. Well, let's go ahead and get started with our first segment. As always, we're going to get started with our off-the-shelf segment. And this, of course, is the segment where we talk about all the awesome things that we've had off the shelf. And it's not just board games. It's not just RPGs. It's all kinds of geeky goodness. Man, do I have some weird ones on the list today.
Which is nice. You actually filled out your list ahead of time, which I appreciate. Thank you.
You're welcome. I love you.
I'm not just seeing it live. It's good times. So where do you want to
begin? Let's go ahead and get started with the basics. Dragon's Quest. I see that your your Dragon's Quest 4 got bumped because of the Olympics?
No.
Did you catch Olympic fever?
No. Okay. So, my wife has the Olympic fever. My wife loves the Olympics. I kind of like watching snowboarding stuff to an extent and bobsledding. And when those things aren't on, like the figure skating, which they have 11 billion events of, I'm just like, ah. So since I could not use the TV to which the PlayStation 4 was connected, and mind you, I have no malice or anything in my heart, because honestly, my wife does not ask for the TV very often. So when she does, I'm very happy to give it to her, because the ratio of Robert TV usage to Gina TV usage is extremely on my side. So I've got a lot of karma to make up for. But because I couldn't use the TV, I'm like, oh, I should play some games on my iPad. And I'm like, I've been trying to play Dragon Quest IV forever. So in the 2 weeks during the Olympics, I put in 27 hours into that game.
Holy crap.
And beat it.
What the heck, man?
Yeah. Well, after my wife gets off work, it was like 3 hours or so of the Olympics every day for 2 weeks straight. Yeah, 27 hours over, 14 days? It's not as bad as it sounds. It's about
two.
Man,
I didn't watch anything. I literally watched 45 minutes worth of curling.
Curling was good.
That was on TV at a restaurant that I was grabbing lunch at during a lunch hour one day. That was it.
We watch curling. My wife made fun of curling. I'm like, curling's like the sport of my people, so I can't say anything. In fact, I admonished her for hating on it.
I wanted to make fun of it, but I couldn't take my eyes off the damn TV, so I guess I'm a curling fan?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I still couldn't figure the whole darn thing out. I had to look it up.
Yeah, it's a weird sport. I know it's very popular up in the Great Lakes area where the family comes from, especially in the Minnesota.
I just kept thinking of Bob Ross when he's talking about cleaning off that brush. you're just going to scrub the devil out of it. Scrub the devil out of it.
Now, we're going to try to get to the happy little target, but not too far past it. Just want to get right on that happy little target.
Yeah, it's a uniquely calm sport.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
Bob Ross would have made an excellent color commentator.
But yeah, Dragon Quest IV.
And then you started Dragon Quest V?
I did start Dragon Quest V.
I think this officially counts as an addiction.
Yeah. Well, they're on the iPad, and they're pretty cheap. It's the DS conversions of it, so it's not... The graphics aren't horrifically 90s, and they've gotten a more updated translation, so they're not as kind of... Not as English as the first language as sometimes they got. Yeah,
I understand.
Dragon Quest IV was, good up until the point where you got the band together, because, the whole point of the game is, they do a bunch of prologues where they introduce all the members of the party and give them really defined characters, and those stories were cool, and then you get to, the main character, and he or she gets everybody together, and they go on, this epic quest all together, and at that, the game completely falls apart, because, there's no story anymore. It's just, go to this city. Go to here, go to this dungeon. And it seems like a lot of the character kind of fell out of the game at that point. I know that was something they were trying to address in Dragon Quest V, which is why I'm kind of curious about it. But yeah, just the first part had a really tight story, and then the second part, it just wasn't as tight. So I was like, oh, this kind of sucks, but I'm enjoying murdering, monsters and taking their stuff. So I'll just ride with it until I get done. and so far, Dragon Quest V is kind of amazing. So you start off that game. It's about the life of a dude, because you have to be a guy in that game. They don't allow you to pick a girl, because the game's very centered around your guy growing up. But yeah, you start off at 6 years old. It's amazing because you're just such a bratty kid, because at the start, you're on this boat and your dad says oh, if you're getting a little, seasick or whatever, you should go on deck and, just kind of roam around. And immediately, because I played Dragon Quest games before, what I did on deck was I broke everything I could and searched every drawer I could find for stuff, because I know they hide stuff in there.
So you went 100% klepto.
Yeah. And I'm like, I was just thinking, this little bastard 6-year-old, he's stealing everything. I walked into this cabin and there was a guard in front of the cabin that's like, the guy who owns this cabin's really wealthy and he wouldn't like it if you were in there. And I'm like, I don't care. And I walked in, I went through all his drawers and stuff, and I'm like, jerk only has a healing leaf? What's this, man? I thought he was rich. So then the ship docks and you're at this port area and your dad's like, I gotta take care of some business. Why don't you go play?
Mainly paying off the debts that you racked up on that boat.
Possibly.
So that you don't get arrested.
Possibly. And he's like, but don't go too far. So, like, I'm kind of wandering around, and I find this bridge, and I'm like, oh, maybe there's more town, because I figure I'm in one of those RPG towns. And I walk outside, and it's, like, the map. And I'm like, oh my, I'm on the mini-map. And I'm like, can I get into a fight? I'm only, like, this six-year-old kid. And so I roam around just a tad, and I get in a fight. And I get in a fight with, like, six monsters. I'm like, oh, crap, this is not good. So I hit one. And I do a pathetic amount of damage on it. I do like 3 points of damage or whatever. And then it hits me back and takes away like, I would say 70% of my life total, the first monster in the first hit. And I'm like, oh my God, this little six-year-old's going to die right now. But right when you take the first hit, it says your dad, his name, I forgot his name already, but it says like your dad appears and jumps in and defends you. And then like dude has like two attacks and he just murders everything. Just murders everything. And I get experience and I immediately go up like a level because I got so much XP. And then it goes back to the overworld map and the dad character is like looking at your character. He's like, son, are you okay? I told you not to wander off. Why did you do that? Are you all right? Here's a healing spell. And I'm like, okay. And he's like, all right, well, my business is done. Let's go, you know, wherever. But don't you wander off again. And then, like, he starts moving on the mini-map, and you can't do anything. You have to follow him. Like, you can't. It's automatic. And we get in another fight, and Home Skillet just wrecks these monsters. I get a ton of XP. I get up to level 3, like, right there. And immediately after, he's like, son, are you okay? Those monsters were scary, weren't they? Here's a healing spell. And I'm like, I didn't even get hit, Dad. And I'm like, this is amazing. This must be like what it's like to be a kid because you just can't do anything. Like your dad just like jumps in and says, are you okay? Here's a healing spell.
Sounds and like a helicopter parent.
He is. Well, there's monsters. Of course he is. And after I was done with that whole segment, and I was so frustrated because I was like, dude, just let me fight a monster for Christ's sakes. I've only got a stick. Give me a sword. I can beat him up, old man. I went and I apologized to my daughter because I'm like, oh, God, being a kid must suck because it like just dredged all these like memories back of like, you know, your parents like doing things to make sure you wouldn't get hurt. And I'm like, I'll be fine, damn it. And yeah. Oh, and you know what? For that game to give me that much of a gut, like, stop smothering me, you old man. I was like, props, game, props. You evoked
Dragon Quest V.
Dragon Quest V, man. Invoked the kid wrath in a 39-year-old man. So,
well, I played some video games, too. Nothing quite that emotional. I played Final Fantasy X, which continues to be Final Fantasy X. That's all the pros and the cons that you've come to expect.
Okay, so I had to cut out our conversation about it last one because I think our cold meds were kicking in because we literally had this 7-minute conversation where you were like, Final Fantasy X is pretty good. I'm like, yeah, I really hate Final Fantasy VIII. And then you'd come back with, yeah, I could see that, but Final Fantasy X is so good. And we just went back and forth like that three times.
Here's the thing. I think Final Fantasy X represents a real culmination of a lot of the gameplay elements.
Yeah, yeah.
The summons don't take 45 minutes like they do in 7.
Mm-hmm.
The story makes a little more sense. I mean, it's bonkers, make no mistake, but, you know, what anime isn't, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But the story's a little more palatable for the Western-influenced mind, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I'm having a good time. Most important, the characters are interesting and fun to get into.
Ten is the Yuna and...
Yeah, yeah.
And Titus, right?
And Titus and all of the water. And Sin.
You know what? I think I need to play that again because I played it. I got it on the PS2, and I don't know why. I just hated it, like, really deep in my core. Like, just the level-up system kind of bugged me. And maybe...
No, it's got a cool system. You just have to learn it.
Yeah, I think that was my problem. I didn't want to learn it. I wanted more Final Fantasy VII with prettiness or Final Fantasy...
Which it's not. It's its own thing.
Yeah. So I think as an adult who's not, like, so... What's the word? Asshole-ish? Wow.
I feel you. I've gone back to a lot of games. I know exactly what you mean.
Am I going to have to put the mature filter on this one? Because I've I've had a few swears. I'm sorry, people. But you're having fun? Have you gotten further?
Yeah. Not too much further. A couple hours more.
Nice. And I've had the big what a twist of the story revealed to me because I existed in pop culture at the time. But are things holding up pretty good or...
Yeah, no, it's holding up very well. It's doing exactly what I want it to do.
Nice.
So it's scratching that itch. I don't know why I had that itch all of a sudden, but I had that itch, and this is totally doing it for me.
Nice. Well, that's good. Yeah, I should give that a whirl again. Is it on the PS4?
I want to say yes, but I'm not 100% sure, but I think so.
Yeah.
I'm playing it on the PC, and they did a special version of it, and it actually comes with the sequel as well, all wrapped up in the same bundle.
Oh, 10-2? Nice. Okay.
Yeah, so it's I got a lot of game for not too much money.
Okay, I'll have to, maybe it's on the PS4. I've been searching for a new game, but yeah, haven't found anything yet. So I see here you've been doing the space program with the Kerbals, huh?
Yes. Yeah, so Dale ended up getting this, and he started talking about it, and I'd been flirting with it for a long, long time, and every time I talked to Dale about it, I got more and more excited, so I just broke down and I just bought it.
Nice.
And I'm so glad I did. This game is absolutely bonkers fun. I mean, like, you can build some crazy, crazy rockets. I've murdered, I don't even know how many Kerbals. But there's always a new one just ready to go. And these happy little idiots just look so happy when they're up in orbit. They're just sitting there in their little capsule. They're happy. Big old stupid grin on their face. They're just having a great time, even though they don't realize, I forgot to put the parachute on this one. They're going to either burn in the atmosphere or die on impact.
That's awful.
Yeah, they're happy little idiots. They make me, you know, they're fun. It's just so much fun. It's stupid, but it's fun. And so the physics are really fun. The physics
do you
really
get better technology as you progress? Like your Kerbals are actually learning something, and thus you get more parts?
Yeah. So you put like radios and stuff on your capsules,
mm-hmm.
and then you transmit all the information that you're gathering. And the more information you gather, then the more you can advance your tech trees.
Okay.
So you get better engine technology, better fuel tanks, better fuel sources. You know, more maneuverable capsules, etc.
Okay, makes sense.
Eventually, you can make it to like the moon.
Yeah, I saw that. You can make like space stations and the whole nine.
And the Kerbals don't need food or oxygen, so it's kind of funny because like Dale said, he's put several into orbit around the sun, and he doesn't know how to get them back. So they're just orbiting the sun, big old grin on their face, being happy little Kerbals.
Well, they must get great data for that.
One would imagine, right?
And then I
continue my love affair with DCS.
Nice.
I play it as much as I can. So at least two or three nights a week. I've got a great group of folks that I fly with. We do a lot of missions now.
I got to warn you, Jonathan, we are dangerously close to having to set up a feeding with that dumb hat.
Bring it. I don't mind. I'll set up a little camera. We'll even figure out how to stream the feed off the game, and then you can just watch my head twist and move, and you can watch my view twist and move, and you can watch me pilot the Harrier.
Well, that's good. So when does the F... What's the Tomcat?
Well, you're talking about the F-14.
Yeah, that's the one you're looking forward to.
Well, there's a joke in the DCS community, because everything's always 2 weeks away. So whenever you ask a question like that, just say, two more weeks.
Does somebody have a GIF handy of a George Clooney going like, isn't this place a geographical anomaly? 2 weeks from everywhere.
If it hasn't happened yet, it needs to.
I will find that GIF and send it to you. I'm sure it exists.
All right. Well, that is video games. Let's move on to movies and TV. Oh, son, you don't even know what I bought.
What did you buy?
Amazon had a special on Manimal, the complete series. All 8 episodes.
Hold up, the complete
series, all 11 episodes. So I'm now the proud owner of both Manimal and Automan on TV.
Hold up. I know for a fact, due to my research, due to this podcast, that Manimal appeared in an episode of Nightman, which was also produced by Glenn Larson. Does it include his crossover episode of that 1990 series?
And Nightman is not currently available.
Well, you know what?
Glenn
Larson and Universal, get on that.
Yeah. I don't know what this company is that produced it. The same company produced both Manimal and Automan. And it's
nice.
Like their whole existence is to bring 80s shows back to us. And you know what? I plunked my money down hardly. And I said, thank you, sirs.
You know what? It's a good service because there's a lot of old crappy movies and TV that haven't been converted to digital. Once they go, they're just gone. It won't exist
anymore.
It's
so bad. It's amazing. I just don't understand how much cocaine would it have taken to get that show greenlit. I mean, it must have been a metric ton. They must have had to back the truck up.
I am positive that Manimal, at least, has everything to do with American Werewolf in London being a thing.
No, it's the same as Automan. Automan was it's basically Tron the TV show.
There you go.
They were trying to capitalize on what was big in the theaters. Absolutely. That's right. I say the cocaine thing in jest.
I actually probably don't, but I mean,
I guarantee you there was some involved.
Oh,
I mean, literally, the premise of the show is, hey, listen, man, I got this idea, right? There's going to be this guy, right? And his family's cursed, and he changed into whatever animal he wants. And he served in Vietnam, and that's how he got away from being a POW. So he's back in New York, and now he's a consultant for the NYPD, a behavioral consultant, an animal behavioral consultant, right? But it's actually him. He's changing into the animals, and he's helping them solve crimes. It's a great idea, right?
Pass me a brick of cocaine. And I love it. Here's a coffee mug size roll of 20s. Just make it happen. If you need more, I got more behind me.
Yeah, that's about how it feels like it came about. It's ridiculous. And the animal transformations. It's just, you know who did the animal transformations?
It was Rick Baker, right? It was the guy they hired.
Not Rick Baker. What's his name from Jurassic Park? Crying out loud. I can't think of his name.
Stan Winston.
Yeah.
Nice.
It was Stan Winston doing all the special effects with a TV budget and proper physical effects.
Does this mean I have to go find the Manimal intro again and post it in the show notes?
Do, 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 do.
What was up with the 80s having intros to shows that took like 10 minutes?
I don't know. But the best part is when they start doing the montages of the characters and they always end with them smiling and laughing. It's friggin' amazing. And I didn't realize this. In Automan, you know who the main character is?
It's Desi Arnaz Jr.
Yeah, I had no idea. Didn't even realize it. Didn't click until I saw the credits for the first time.
My favorite part is when Automan like churns in his car. His car doesn't actually churn. It just randomly shifts directions and keeps going.
Oh, yeah. It's the 90 degree turns, just like Tron.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Desi Arnaz is just like up against the glass every time that happens.
It's so terrible. So good. The 80s were a remarkable special time. It's
cocaine snowed 80s, man.
Just amazing.
Well, the good times rolled with you, sir, so tell me about Seventh Son.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it just kept getting worse. So here's the thing about Seventh Son. It's got this amazing, amazing cast. For some reason, half of them are using British accents, including inexplicably Jeff Bridges. And then for some reason, the main character that's kind of supposed to be the audience, he's just got an American accent.
Like you do, yeah.
No reason why. Just because.
Just because.
Pretty much everybody else has a British accent. It's just nuts.
Well, you're still watching Altered Carbon. Is that still good?
No, I finished it. Yes. Ooh. I really enjoyed Altered Carbon. I really, really hope they explore that universe a little more. It was very well done. And I because I finished Altered Carbon, I had a chance to watch two more episodes of The Expanse. I'm almost done with season one there.
Yeah, I need to get back on that train. How's it going?
Yeah, me too. I don't know why I fell off. I just got distracted. Now I'm glad I'm back. It's so good.
You know what somebody pointed out the other day about that show, and it did not occur to me, but it makes the show that much better. Have you ever seen the movie Sky High?
Yeah, long time ago.
You remember War and Peace?
Vaguely. I'm going to have to look it up.
That's the main character of The Expanse. Same actor.
My God, you're so right.
I'm not right. I read that on Twitter somewhere, but yes.
I don't know why that didn't click. Oh, it's so terrible.
Yeah, I know.
Look at that hair.
Yeah, he's so 90s goth, punk rock, yeah. Something.
No, completely. 100% from Concentrate.
Yeah, it's so good. By the way, Sky High, very underrated movie. If you haven't seen it, highly suggest.
No, truly. Fun. All right, well, let's let's get out of TV land, of movie land, and you are prepping for some RPG stuff.
Yeah. No, it just kind of occurred to me the other day that I've been wanting to game for a while anyway, but since Delta Green is looking more and more like a thing I want to do, I'm like, I can't play Delta Green with my 6-year-old because that is not a good idea. So,
yeah, no, I can see that.
Yeah, so I'm like, you know, I really want to game with her, and I just need to get off my butt and do it, so... Well, I'm just like, you know what, we're going to make her a character. She can be kind of whatever she wants. And I think I'm going to like purposely tone down everything. And the way I'm going to do that is I'm going to do the house rule where instead of getting your constitution modifier at first level, I'm going to give you your constitution score and then just bump the experience up to probably second edition levels and just make everybody level super slow and run through the keep on the Borderlands, you know, and just, you know, only figure I'll play it for about an hour or two every, looks like we're going to do it on Saturdays.
Very cool. Very cool.
And yeah, and just try to do that. But the fun part was, so I listened to a podcast called Just One More Fix, and the hosts of it are pretty cool people, and they will respond to you on Twitter. So I tweeted at them if they had any ideas, because I was figuring I was just going to do 5th edition D&D, because I'm familiar with it enough that I don't have to worry about it too much. But I was wondering if they had anything else, and they suggested Fate, which, you know, because it has the positive and the negatives, but she hasn't really done a lot of subtraction yet, so I was a little iffy on Fate, but I thought about Fate too. They suggested actually the My Little Pony RPG Tales from Equestria. They said it's easy enough that like the lady who got in on this conversation, she said the character creation of that is so easy that a 6-year-old could probably do it. And I'm like, ooh, that's actually interesting. I'm gonna have to go pick that game up now. And then the male host, I completely forget his name, because he posts as Just One More Fix, like their show, and then his wife posts as herself. So I like know her name because I can see it in my brain. But I can't. He's just one more fix guy. But he suggested a OSR game called The Black Hack, which is just a more simplistic, stripped down, rules light version of probably 3rd edition D&D. From what I've seen about it, it's the best of 3rd edition and 5th edition, I think. It was just an interesting conversation over on Twitter because, you know, a couple people got involved and were looking into it. And I don't know. It was just nice. But yeah, I think I'm going to go with 5th edition just because I know it like the back of my hand. And I'm not expecting my kid to make a character. You just got to ask her the right questions. You know, it's like,
yeah, of course.
What do you want to play? If you play this, you get a pet. What kind of pet do you want? You know, because she was all about being a fairy. And so we were like, oh, she could be a warlock because, you know, they're pretty simple spellcasters and we could kind of direct her at stuff. And then all of a sudden she's like, no, I want to be a thief instead. And I'm like, if you play a thief, you're not going to be able to get a pet like you want. And she's like, oh, but I want a pet. I'm like, well, sorry, you know, you got to play by the rules. So we'll see what she ends up picking. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, I need to get that started. Probably not this weekend, but I just need to get that going. So hopefully soon. You know, because my 6-year-old, she's showing some really good skills at math at her age. You know, she like gets numbers. Mm-hmm. And like I said, she hasn't done a lot of subtracting, but I think just what I'm seeing, because they've been playing with dice and she says she really likes it at school for like random number generation and kind of basic probabilities.
Yeah, they do that at that age.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, you know, just rolling basic dice and then just adding modifiers to them, especially if they're
positive modifiers.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I want. And then I want her to, she's like, okay, she's getting better at reading, but yeah, just the little bit of reading you have to do to just, you know, it's like, oh, this is the weapon I'm looking for, whatever. I think D&D will do what I need it to do. Or Fate, because it's a little bit more narrative, might not, you know, because there's sentences involved, not just like longsword. So I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, like I said, any practice you can get them is good practice.
Yeah. So that's the plan. Speaking of RPGs, Jonathan says here, Dawn of Rebellion era sourcebook.
Oh, yeah. So there was a new sourcebook released by FFG for the Star Wars system,
uh-huh.
And it's their first era sourcebook. So rather than a source book that covers rules or covers specific character types or all that stuff, this is all about the universe and the time period. So they add stuff like a new character type, like the retired clone trooper, because this is covering the era of just before A New Hope.
Oh, so that like the Rebels show.
Exactly. So it's basically the Rebels show and the Rogue One movie. So it talks about how like the Death Star is still in orbit over Scarif, and it introduces a bunch of new job types, and it's just tons and tons and tons of information about the world. This book is amazing, and you know, I've got all the splat books for this system, and I got to tell you, this by far just exceeds every expectation I had. It's just so deep, and there's so much that you can pull into your campaigns. It's just amazing. This is the first must-have splat book. The rest are all super awesome. Make no mistake. But this one's just like jaw-droppingly good. Yeah, that's what I'm up to in the RPG space currently. Haven't had a chance to join any of my games recently. It's just been, timing has been off.
Yeah.
There always seems to be a demand on the one night that everybody else can play. And then on the nights that I'm free, I'm just sitting there staring at the wall because everybody else is busy.
I forgot to mention something. So one day, Overwatch, the Overwatch League channel fired up, and they did a puppy rumble.
I heard about that.
It was so amazing because it was like the actual commentators of all of their Overwatch games. And they basically got like a dozen puppies together. They dressed them up as Overwatch characters by putting like vests on them. Yeah. And then they just set them loose in this room that had two flags in it. And then, it was just capture the flag. And of course, none of the dogs went for the flag. And there were like these three dogs that kept playing. But yeah, they were just commentating these dogs, like playing with each other, like it was an Overwatch thing. And it was amazing. And like the best part is, you know, two of these dogs were fighting and they're watching, oh, look, and there we go. Kira's going in for the thing. And then like one of the dogs, like from off camera, just jumps in and like dive tackles both of them. They're like, oh, the play. And it was so funny. And they were just on their game and they were just talking about these dogs and it was really funny. And it went on and on. It was hours long. And it was for, you know, various pet charities. And I recognized they had a little segment at the no kill shelter in Austin too, you know, where they were just advertising it and saying like, you could get this dog right now.
Didn't watch that. I don't need another dog.
But it was so funny. I don't know, between Old Spice and now this Overwatch marketing, I'm like, are we in some sort of weird golden era of weird marketing again? Like, have we entered that zone? Because I'm happy about that.
I'd buy that for a dollar.
Yeah. So anyway, I had to mention that. It was adorable. It was fun.
And let's round out our conversation, of course, with board games. Did you get a chance to play anything?
No.
Well, don't worry. I had a couple busy nights.
Yeah, I'm opening up the list of shame. Or the wall of opportunity, sorry.
Oh, yeah. You can start chipping away at that bad boy, son.
Yeah. I waited to do this until we did it live, because...
First of all, in the past week and a half, I have played Rising Sun 3 times.
Taken Rising Sun?
That game is so... You know what? We're not going to talk about it right now. We're going to talk about it later.
Mm-hmm.
I tried Poo. It's basically kind of a riff off of War.
Yeah, pretty much.
The kids are totally into Poo, so I gave them Poo, and now they play Poo upstairs.
Nice.
And then I played a game called Control, which I had on my list of opportunity. And Control is kind of interesting. There's a randomized deck of cards. All the cards have numbers, and they also have powers. Some of the powers are silver, and they kick in the moment you play the card. Some are gold, and you don't get the numerical value, but they tend to have some stronger powers. Does that make sense?
That makes sense.
And basically, the game is just you're trying to build a hand of 21 on the table. But there's all kinds of shenanigans and hijinks going on. The game plays very, very quickly, and it's got beautiful production. Like, seriously, some of the best graphic design I've ever seen in a game. It just looks gorgeous. And then I had some folks over, and after we finished Rising Sun one night, it was Dale and Cohen and April and myself. We played a little bit of Spyfall 2. And that's an interesting one. I don't think 4 was enough people for it. We were having a problem because in Spyfall, everybody gets a card. One person is the spy. The other people are not spies. And they know what their location is. And everybody's asking each other questions about the location, trying to determine who doesn't know what the location is. So, unfortunately, with only 4 people, it's really, really hard to hide as the spy. And it's really, really hard to get enough information to be able to hide before you get asked a question. I think Spyfall 2 is going to work really, really well as a good party-style game. I just think we need more people. Then I played a game of Walk on Fire. And Walk on Fire is a game I've had for quite some time. It's super, super fun. It's one of the Green Couch games. And, you know, they have the tiny little boxes, but there's a whole lot of game in there. They're the ones that made that Rocky Road a la mode that I was talking about a little ways back. In Walk on Fire, you have an area, the play area, that is basically a giant walk. And you take tarot sides cards, which are your spatulas, and then you're flipping the cards inside of the walk, trying to find the best ingredients. And it's a little bit of luck and randomization. And even to a certain extent, because you can flip over stuff that might be attractive to the other players at the table, there's a little bit of screw your neighbor, too. And then Jaipur, which I've talked about extensively on the show, got a chance to play that a couple times. Always fun. And then I played another game, and that was Strife, which is a little two-player game. It's kind of interesting. In it, each player has a hand, an identical hand of 10 cards. Each of the cards has a different numerical value, which dictates when you go first. The highest number has the most power, and therefore they go first. And there's 2 phases to the game. And each of the cards has 2 powers listed on it, a primary power and a secondary power. So in the first phase of the game, your primary powers trigger, and you play that card down, and whoever has the highest number gets to go first, right? In the second phase of the game, your discard pile comes into play, and that lets you have access to your secondary pile, or your secondary power. And what that does is it gives you some more flexibility and allows you to interact with, like, the cards that are still in your hand or the cards that are potentially in your discard pile, etc. And you're basically trying to manipulate the environment to have the most power at the end of a round and take area cards. And the person with the highest area score at the end of the game wins. And then finally, we had a chance to sit down, and after Rising Sun one night, the same group of four of us, we all sat down and I taught them Century Spice Road. And everybody did really, really well with that too. Everybody was enjoying it. That game continues to come out a lot around here. It's so much fun.
And to round out the list, Jonathan, did anything new enter your shame shelf?
Yes, there was a new edition. Two new editions. First, I got my copy of Giant Killer Robots. And it is, in fact, giant. I mean, it's a ginormous box. It comes with a bunch of robots. There's four of the big, basically like the star of the show robots. And they're all pre-painted. And they look really nice. And then CMON did something really cool. They actually finished Zombicide Green Horde early. So they sent us the core game. And they're going to send us all the Kickstarter stuff later.
Yeah, they do that a lot, actually.
Yeah, they did that with the last Zombicide, too, the Black Plague. And I really appreciate it. It's cool. You know, it lets you learn the game, and then by the time the Kickstarter extras roll around, you're ready for them, because you've already played the game a bunch.
Yeah. It's like getting an expansion, probably right when you want it.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it's like. It's a really clever way of distributing it. So those two have come in, haven't had a chance to play them yet, but I'm getting there. I am burning more games off my shame list than I am adding.
That's
a really good place to be in right now.
That's true.
But the year is young. There are many weeks yet in front of me.
Okay. Well, this is getting complicated, so I can't tell you how many you've added and taken away. But yeah, you are net down.
Net down three this week. But it's getting a little more difficult now, Robert.
How so?
Because the smaller, easy-to-play games are disappearing quickly. Which leaves me with the mega, you know, day-long games like Twilight Imperium.
Yes.
Which it's basically like, hey, you have 10 hours? Let's do this.
Well, I look forward to my points, I hope. So
you shut your mouth. Not done with you yet.
All right, sir. Well, I call this opening and closing of the list of opportunity complete for this episode.
And that brings us, of course, to the end of our off-the-shelf segment. We will return after a few minutes, after a brief message from us, most likely.
Yeah, if you want to be a sponsor, we could use one. It'd be fun.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
It would be cool.
So we'll be back in just a few moments with our next amazing segment. And until then, Robert, any words of wisdom?
Yeah, those come at the end of the show, so shut up.
Do you have a tabletop, board game, miniature game, or RPG that you're going to release for retail?
Or do you have an upcoming tabletop Kickstarter that you're about to launch?
We would love to interview you for a future episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast.
Send us an email to fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com to schedule an interview. And welcome back. It is now time, of course, for our Wisdom of Crowd segment. This is our bi-weekly tabletop news segment. And a decent bit of news this week.
Yeah. It was funny. I was listening to episode 13. Yeah. It's kind of weird. Like, we were talking about getting a lot of news all of a sudden right then, too. So I guess this is the late, mid to late February news dump for Gen Con prep, I guess.
Alrighty, well, let's take a look here. First up on the list, we have some new Magic the Gathering stuff.
A little history here. When I owned a shop, one of the cards that I heard people say out loud they would never, ever unban was Jace the Mind Sculptor, because that Planeswalker was so good that it bent the game around it. And, nonetheless, it's one of the few cards in the history of Magic that was banned in Standard which is rare up until fairly recently. But yeah. So this was like they're like, they'll never unban it. They'll just never unban it. And guess what? They unbanned it in Modern. Probably to sell Magic 25th or Magic Modern 25th anniversary because it's in there. But yeah. And I wish I could tell you why it was so awful, but apparently it's a key part in a deck that is just, it was so good back in the day that it was like the only deck people would play.
Which seems contrary to the whole concept of Magic.
Yeah. I mean, well, that's generally when they ban cards in Magic, is when like a deck, or maybe the deck and the anti-deck, are the only decks worth playing, because, you know, everything else is just, you can't win, because like the one deck's so good it can just beat everything, and then there's the anti-deck that will just beat the deck. And sometimes there's not even that. Sometimes it's just there's one deck. Jace the Mind Sculptor. Use them while you can, people. I don't think that'll be forever. So, more on to our usual fare. WizKids was at the New York Toy Fair over the last 2 weeks, over the Olympic weeks, shall we say. And they announced a ton of new stuff. Going back to Magic, they've announced that they're going to release a line of miniatures called Token Creatures. So instead of slapping down a card with a Pegasus or an Angel or a Villager or whatever the common token animals, critters are in Magic, you'll be able to slap down a miniature instead to have a more three-dimensional aspect to your play, which is...
That's cool.
That's kind of awesome. Yeah. Especially... I don't know if there is a way on it, but there needs to be a way to tap them. So I don't know, maybe if you just turn them sideways, I don't know. But yeah, hopefully they have some sort of marker on how to tap them. But that's pretty cool. So we also got, we have had the Red Dragon Head. We've had a Mind Flayer, and we've had a Beholder Wall Trophy. Coming soon to a wall of awesome near you, a Black Dragon Head will be the new trophy for the year.
And those trophies look so good. I mean, they're just so good.
Yeah, this black dragon, the black dragons are just kind of creepy looking because they're supposed to be kind of skeletal, you know, and they look like they're sort of decaying because they like live in swamps or something. And this one's especially dead because it's got like its dead lifeless tongue sort of hanging out of it. So the picture looks neat. So I didn't get anything on MSRP. This is very, very early. But yeah, it looks pretty cool. So that'll be a new thing for your wall collection. And then last but not least, and for unknown reasons, WizKids is building a D&D boat, like a ship. It doesn't look like a pirate ship. It looks a little bit too fancy for that. And the decks, you can lift the decks off and you can see stuff inside. So you can, you know, fight in the decks below or just use it for storage. And then the decks themselves, one side will just be, you know, looks like wood and be thematic. And the other side will have a square grid on them for combat.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it looks super duper sexy. Like I want one so bad, and I don't even need it. And I've got a theory. This may have something to do with the story that comes out later this year. Because I'm like, why would they make a pirate ship? Like it seems weird. I don't get it. So I don't know.
A lot of people like to put D&D adventures on the ocean.
That's true. But I'm wondering if it's going to tie in. Like if this is a hint of things to come. Like they know that the next adventure is going to have a boat of some sort, so maybe this boat will tie into that. I don't know, but regardless, it's rad.
Well, I'm sure we're gonna find out pretty quick.
Actually, no, we won't, because the next book is supposed to come out in like October, and they only solicit 3 months ahead of time, so it's gonna be the summer. It's gonna be like 3 or 4 more months until we find out, Jonathan.
I'm sure sad. It'll be fine.
I'm sad. And not to be outdone, Gale Force 9 had some D&D stuff, I believe, at the New York Toy Fair, because it came out all around the same time. They're making paint sets for D&D. They're going to have a monster set and a hero set. So if you want to get into the fine world of painting, they'll have something for you, which will be fun. And then more importantly, they've said there will be a new D&D board game that'll MSRP for about $50 that they are producing. So, and it's just blank box art. They haven't said what it is. So again, maybe it'll tie into the new story that's coming out in the fall. Who knows? More D&D board gaming and RPG goodness. Can't go wrong with that.
Well, you know what time of the year it is, right?
Time to get a new watch?
No, it's the beginning of con season. And con season, of course, culminates with...
Origins?
No. Come on.
War Machine Weekend?
No. I mean, that's both good choices, but...
San Diego Comic-Con?
Not even related to our podcast.
PAX? PAX Unplugged.
It's getting there.
Gen Con?
That'd be the one.
Yeah.
And the big news coming out of Gen Con is that despite selling out last year, it's actually selling out again this year, and it's selling out faster. It's selling 6% faster than last year.
Yeah, I guess it means if you want to go to Gen Con, buy your tickets now.
Well, you know, a lot of this news has come out of the New York Toy Fair, and another big announcement came out of Hasbro, because they have a new thing called HasLab.
Have you seen this?
No, I haven't. This was the first mention I'd seen of it, but I haven't really been keeping up with the news as much as I should be.
Okay, okay. The link is in the show notes. Click on the link. You need to see this. Okay, so basically, this is Hasbro's stab at basically crowdfunding. So what they're going to do is, if they can get enough pre-orders, which sadly it doesn't look like this first one's going to do, but it's awesome. But if they can get enough pre-orders for some sort of toy, some sort of concept toy, they will produce it and then ship it to you, right?
Makes sense. Kind of like Lego Ideas.
Yeah, exactly. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, they're trying to steal Kickstarter. I'm like, this is completely Lego Ideas, guys. Come on, seriously. But yeah. So what is the first one they're going to do, Jonathan?
Oh my God, it's amazing is what it is. It's Jabba's sail barge, but I mean, it's in a ridiculous scale.
Yeah, I don't think it's one for one, because it'd have to be the size of a car to be one for one, but it's big. It's what, 4 feet?
I mean, it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's nice and big.
You can explore all the rooms. You can look at all the different rooms. Jabba's hanging out in the throne room. Oh, that price though. Woo! Wow.
What is the MSRP? I haven't looked at it for a while.
That'd be $499.99 plus tax.
Yeah, there you go. So I guess move to Oregon, because we don't have sales tax. Ah! But yeah. It's not cheap. It is not cheap. But
yeah, but this looks amazing.
Yeah, and this is what I like about this. I mean, obviously stuff like this is for the serious collector, or...
Yeah, it's basically the size of the model they used to film the movie.
Exactly. But, for weird specialty toys that they're like, this would be cool to make, but I don't think anybody would buy this.
Definitely beyond specialty toy. I mean, this is, like, legitimate, like, display model.
Right, but isn't it interesting that we're here, with 3D printing and advancements in toy making and stuff? Like, a toy company can say, like, hey, super collector, do you really want something like this? Here, just go, just pre-order it. And if we can make it, we'll make it. And if we can't, we can't. No big deal. And it's interesting we're here, but I like it.
No, this is cool. This is a cool idea. I really like this.
Yeah, and there's a lot of hate on the internet about this, because I think
you could have put your period at the end of internet.
Yeah, that's true. This doesn't seem like a cash grab, because this toy is gigantic. I don't think they're like trying to like, I don't think this is something they'd produce ordinarily. So I'm not shocked it's here. So I dig it, and there's Hasbro has so many properties. They have so many properties, it's like, do you want a giant ass Unicron? Like, yeah, we can make that as part of this. Or, do you want Canterlot Castle from MLT?
It weighs 14 pounds.
Yeah, it's a cool toy. So, I don't know. I dig this. And hopefully, like I said, I hope it funds, but it's
got a long way to go. It's got 31 more days to go, and it's more than halfway.
No, it's a little less.
No, a little less than halfway. It's about halfway.
But still, I got hopes. Not that I'm going to buy this.
35 more days to go.
Yeah. Not that I'm going to buy this, because I don't collect Star Wars figures, but if you do, you should look into this. This seems to be like the set piece.
I mean, I don't collect the figures either, but yeah, I mean, God, how much does a kidney go for? Because I would totally put this up in my house.
Yeah, exactly.
Much to the chagrin of my wife.
Yeah. So just check out HasLab and check back in, just like you got to check back in with Lego Ideas, because sometimes there's cool stuff to vote on in there. So you got to do that. So I caught this today, Jonathan.
Yes. Our little 1 day delay actually kind of worked in our favor.
Yes. The Golden Geek nominations are up for, the board. Well, not the Board Game Geek site, because it's all three of them. So like Board Game Geek, Video Game Geek, and RPG Geek, their awards are up. And, it's kind of early to start like going through them and picking winners and whatnot, but.
And there's also just a ton of them.
Yeah. Oh, there's a metric ton, but it's always good. Go find the list if you want to look at it. Cause there's maybe something there that you didn't think about or didn't know existed or weren't really looking at. And, maybe it's worth taking a look again if you see something on there. So.
And let me tell you, just looking at the Board Game of the Year category, there are some amazing games on this list.
Yeah, any favorites? Any early favorites?
Well, I mean, just based on the things I've played, Century Spice Road is there. Charterstone by Jamie Stegmaier, who's awesome. Sagrada I've played and is excellent. I mean, there's just so many good games on this list.
Yeah, yeah. And RPGs are, yeah. I of the games I've read, all of them are good. So, yeah, no, it's a good...
I'm just looking at all the different categories and just kind of glancing at each list of nominees. I mean, there's just too much good stuff on here. I mean, it just... that of all things shows you just how healthy everything is in the industry right now. It's just nuts.
It is pretty nuts. I agree. Regardless, go check it out, people. It's worth it.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff here. And if you've got a Board Game Geek account and you want to vote, you absolutely can and should.
And lastly, Jonathan, allow me to have you approach an intersection. The intersection of nerds and the wide culture. Jonathan, WizKids/NCA has acquired the Chia Pet and the Clapper.
It's awfully dark in here.
Yeah, I didn't know the same company owned both of those, but yeah, they do. They own a lot of gadgets. I was checking it out. Like they have a lot of. And I'm assuming NCA got all of them, but the Chia Pet and the Clapper are the two that are currently in production.
Oh my god! But, can you imagine Dungeons and Dragons Chia Pets?
Yeah, because NECA has the licensing for a ton of pop culture stuff, and there's already a ton of pop culture Chia Pets, but this blows the doors wide open on all of
this.
This
is
my
a
friend.
Pretty remarkable thing. This could turn out to be the greatest thing to ever happen to the world.
You know what I would love? Think of a Chia Pet that looks like a beholder, and then you grow out extra, you know, vegetable eye stalks on it. It'd be great.
Cha-cha-cha eye stalks.
Yes. Yes. I don't know how you're gonna retheme the Clapper. I guess that was part of the package, but yeah, Chia Pet, man. Chia Pet coming with everything that WizKids had. Like what's a good 40k Chia Pet, because they have the Warhammer license right now. I can't think of who would be. Oh, a Kroot with like the head spikes going into the Chia. Oh, that'd be kind of fun. I could do that. Or like a weird like Tyranid. It's so good. And then they got comic books with the Heroclix, and they've got so like a Starship Enterprise with just the Chia Pet on top for
that'd
walls
be cool. On the saucer yeah. section.
Yes,
I'd be down. I'd buy that. I'm not gonna lie. Well, that brings us to the end of the big news. You ready for some news bites?
News bites. All right, bring it on me, sir. Bring it
All
on.
All right, we're going to start off with an old-time favorite, a game that's been around for quite some time, and a lot of us, it was one of the earliest games that we played. Axis and Allies is getting a new variant. Axis and Allies and Zombies.
So I'm on the record as being kind of over the zombie thing. However, I like this, and I'll tell you why. Axis and Allies, there's been a lot of iterations of it, and they're all fine iterations, and I don't mind that, but I like games that kind of have a weird random element to it, and that's how it seems like this is going to be. It's like normal Axis and Allies, so you pick your side, but then there's this non-player controlled side of just the zombie horde sort of raging around from what I've read, and I like that. I like you know, games. And do you, when you want to play Axis and Allies, do you want that all the time? No, because the zombies can wreck your plans, and it's just dumb luck that they do. But I think it adds in a nice twist for people who are looking for something a little different. And, you know, it's I like the random elements of it. Like, I think they did a Axis and Allies with the Daleks, and, like, the Doctor would run around and wreck all your plans, too. And I don't know. I think those are fun. I kind of like random elements. Not all the time.
I would buy this in a heartbeat. I think this looks like a cool, fun game. I think it's
Yeah,
neat.
exactly. You don't play a
different.
Game... Yeah, it's something different. You don't play Axis and Allies and Zombies when you want a really hardcore tactical battle, but sometimes you just need something where you have to adjust accordingly to the whims of fate. And sometimes
I mean,
that's
I actively sat down after seeking out Manimal. So if anybody understands the concept of the winds of fate, it's me.
Manimal. You know what, sir? When we bring up Manimal, I think it's time to move on to the next bite. So go.
All right, next bite. Terraforming Mars is getting a new expansion. It is getting the Prelude expansion.
Oh, I have not heard of this.
Your first steps in becoming a great corporation.
So is this a game you play before the game?
It's an expansion that brings a bunch more, and this is off the press release here, theme and power to each corporation.
Huh.
So it's adding a lot of flavor text. It's adding a lot of things like that. It's a small expansion. It basically focuses on the early stages of the Mars colonization, and it's giving background stories to the different corporations.
You know, it could kind of use that. It could also kind of use, because the corporations were not incredibly samey, but there was some sameness to them because they just were all kind of good at something.
Well, it basically gives you a starting combo to your corporation, and it's all based around theme. So that's kind of a neat idea. Neat little expansion. That sounds cool.
Yeah, and you know what? Again, you know, it's kind of one of those things. Like, sometimes, you know, when you play the game to death, sometimes you just want to shake it up a little bit. And shaking it up with some new, you know, fluffy, possibly not incredibly well-balanced because it's fluffy. But, you know, sometimes top-down design is good. So I approve. Thumbs up.
Next up on News Bites, what do prehistoric critters and seven wonders have in common?
Prehistoric critters, seven wonders, prehistoric critters, seven, seven. They're all dead.
Well, that is actually a correct answer, but it's not quite what I was looking for.
I'm technically
for.
Correct, which is the best kind of correct.
No, they both have two-player games that are out. Seven Wonders, of course, have Seven Wonders Duel, which is an amazing two-player variant of Seven Wonders, which I highly recommend, and you and I have played it.
We covered that delightful game in Forgot My Dice, Episode 2. It's a red dragon. They're evil. It's okay.
Well, now, Dino Island, the recently released game from Pandasaurus, is getting a two-player variant game. It's called Duelosaur Island, and it's just a two-player standalone sequel that's based around the Dinosaur Island IP.
I love that name!
I know, isn't it amazing? I had a feeling you were going to like this one. I've been really excited about showing you this one.
It's Duelosaurus Rex. He holds two katanas in his little wibbly arms.
Well, I gotta say, this one looks super awesome. I love purpose-built two-player games. I think they're fantastic, and the world needs more of them. And the fact that this is built off of Dinosaur Island just makes me happy.
Yeah, two-player games are so situational because it's you don't need them all the time, but when you need them, you really, really need them.
Yeah, and there's a game that can be tuned specifically for two players is a remarkable, remarkable thing. It's just fun.
Are there any more bites?
Yes, a couple more bites.
Okay.
Next bite. Okay, in more FFG news, they have now released a new skirmish map for Imperial Assault, and it is based on Mos Eisley. It's the Mos Eisley skirmish map.
Fun. Is this like a thing of boards? Or
No. It's a neoprene playmat, and they've released a bunch of these. I have a couple of these, and what it is the map is pre-laid out on the neoprene, and so you just roll out the map, and there's your skirmish map.
Does it have a grid on it?
It does. It has all the standard grid stuff that you would find on a normal Imperial Assault map.
Nice, which means you could also use it for an RPG.
Yes, and what's really cool is that once you have the map open, you actually get a couple cards in there as well that give you scenarios for the specifically for the skirmish map.
Nice.
And like you said, you can use it for other things like RPGs as well.
If you need a space bar.
Yep. A space bar with some dirty alleys.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, that works for Firefly and Serenity, because oddly those are two different RPGs.
And I believe they, if I'm remembering correctly, I think they've released six or seven of these things. This will be, I believe, the eighth.
Oh, my.
Yeah, no, they're great. They're great. They're like $30. You get this giant neoprene playmat, too. They're really, really big. They're like 3x3.
Nice. And those are just handy, too, if you're like playing the normal game, because you can, you know, flip it over if it's distracting or whatever. But they it's just nice. So you're not knocking things and a little cushion.
Yeah. I don't know. No, it's good stuff. It's really, really good stuff. I'm a big fan of these. I own most of them. And yeah, that's coming out soon. And then finally, rounding out News Bites, I did want to bring up something that a couple listeners were talking about. Did you see that? That Dale and Ray were talking about it?
I saw that, but it did not stick for me.
Yes, well, a couple of our listeners were online talking about this, and they were...
No, they were talking about it over on our Facebook group, the Forgot My Dice podcast. You should join it.
Which you absolutely should. We have our page, and then we have this awesome little Facebook page called Forgot My Dice Podcast Fans, which is a group where you can discuss everything you want. And it's been getting spicier and spicier lately.
Yeah. Well, remember people, there is only currently one rule, which is this is how I ran my game shop, my game and comic shop, which is the first rule is don't make us make a rule.
Yep. And that's so, it.
Yeah. That's the only rule we have. When my comic shop, by the way, got up to 8 rules in the course of it. And one of them was you were not allowed to sing Dido or Paula Cole while inside the store. And that is a long story.
Those are oddly specific.
It is not. It needed to be made. We'll just say that Magic tournament was hell, and we'll leave it at that.
Well, both Dale and Ray wanted to make sure that we mentioned that the Reckoners is out right now on Kickstarter.
Oh,
And it's cool. They actually have a really good video on this one, and they use the same narrator that they use for the audiobooks, which I thought was kind of cool. Nice little tie in there. And The Reckoners is actually based on a Brandon Sanderson book, a set of books, which Dale has been trying to convince me to grab for Carlos. So there are superhumans, and the superhumans turn out to be kind of jerks, and they try and take over the world. And The Reckoners is a board game all about the humans fighting against one of these supervillains.
Oh, fun.
Yeah.
Cool. I got nothing. I'm just looking at it right now and making good radio.
There you go. And that is it for News Bites on this episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast, which of course means it's time for A Year in the Life, our segment where we look at what we deep dove a year ago. We've got 365 seconds to talk about it again. And if we want to go longer, well, then we need to take it off the shelf and do it. So, Robert, what happened a year ago?
A year ago, Forgot My Dice had episode 13, Meatbag, I Knew Thee Well. And we talked about the art of magic and the plane shift for a setting that we both love called Kaladesh. There isn't a ton to say because I know both of us haven't played this. We would have talked about this. So
no, sadly not.
No, sadly not. But
the want is there. The want is most definitely there because Kaladesh is still my favorite Magic the Gathering setting.
Yeah. I have high hopes for Dominaria, but yeah. Of all of them, I think it was the most. It was the most not D&D, but it was the most interesting by far. Like, the world was fascinating. But yeah, we cover all of these at my insistence. We cover all of these as they come out. Yeah, I mean, I that's the thing I would say about it. I mean, even looking back at it now, it is the most that removed from Dungeons & Dragons, from like your normal Dungeons & Dragons stuff. But I think, interestingly, I think you could build a campaign out of it pretty easily because it's...
Because it's steampunk idea with magic.
Yeah, and it's got built-in conflict, and there's a lot of things to like. It's just, yeah, your work will be cut out for you. And is it great for D&D? Maybe not. You know what I could almost imagine it as? I know someone's working on a fantasy conversion of the gumshoe system, and that might be cool because, you know, figuring out like who invented some sort of magic piece of technology and stuff. Like I could see kind of like a cop game in it. That would be kind of fun too. Like tracking down rogue sorcerers and whatnot. There's something there. So, but yeah, no, it's a great setting. The art book is amazing. It is just like pure. It's just like pure imagination for your brain, just because it's so, the art is just awesome. So,
like I said, this is my favorite magic setting of all time, really.
Honestly, I think of all of the art books I own, which I own all of them, it's probably, I don't know if I'd say it's the, it's up there. It's hard for me to kind of pin down the best because I really liked Innistrad too, but this one, just it was just written. I would say, how about this? If I had to give a technical award, I think I would give it to this book because it gets all the story beats exactly right. It tells you everything you need to know and just leaves you with just enough that you want a little bit more on everything, but not so much that it's kind of like, why didn't they talk about it enough? Like, it gives you just everything you want, but it's like, oh, but I could see there's more and I want it. It's just it's definitely the most solid out of all the art books. I'll give it that for sure.
And so. I would love to play a game in Kaladesh. I think that would be amazing. That was. Of all these plane shift books that we've talked about so far, that was by far the one I'm most likely to pick up and play.
Yeah, I agree. Actually, I don't agree because I'm been working on an Innistrad thing forever, so I guess I'm a liar. But yeah, there you go.
There you go.
But that'll be out on FMD Classic next week, hopefully, give or take. Listen to the episode, hear our thoughts about it. I listened to the episode. I was amused because we talked about the pizza cake in that episode again, which...
Aw, pizza cake!
I always love talking about pizza cake. That was the episode where I also explained my love affair with pizza cake and how I love seeing... Because I could see when you click off our site, people, and if you click on the pizza cake recipe, I know somebody looked at it, and it makes me happy. And it still does! It still does! It still makes me happy when it happens, so... And we haven't had one this year. You can be that person. Go to the FMD 13 show notes and click on the pizza cake recipe, people, please.
That brings us to the end of our Wisdom of Crowds segment, and we will be back after a short break with our deep dive of the episode, Rising Sun. We love getting feedback, so please let us know how we're doing by doing one of the following.
You can email us at fmdpodcast2016@gmail.com.
You can join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/fmdpodcast.
We also have Facebook comments enabled for all our posts at forgotmydice.com.
You can also message us or tweet us on Twitter. Find us at forgotmydice.
You can join us on Patreon, where we post outtakes and other bonus content.
And if you like the show, the best way for more people to find out about us is to give Forgot My Dice a review on iTunes, Stitcher, or the Google Store.
Lastly, for those of you who want control to sanction the podcast, pick up your shoe phone and call Agent 82. Chief, it's acceptable to get podcasts on our wristwatches. It won't be distracting.
I just don't even know what's happening right now.
Well, it's classified, Jonathan. I could tell you, but then I'd have to kill you.
Oh, we've got to get these things upgraded from the 1960s. And welcome back. It is now time for our final segment of the evening, the deep dive. And in this episode, we're going to be deep diving Rising Sun, which we've definitely talked about on the show before. And I've been such a good boy, Robert. I waited all that time so patiently. And now the question is, have I been rewarded?
Do you want a cookie?
No, I really just want to sit down and play Rising Sun again.
You need a pat on the head and an attaboy?
No, I just need to sit down and play Rising Sun again.
Okay.
It's that kind of good.
Okay.
So let's talk about it.
Rising Sun is a board game for 3 to 5 players set in a legendary feudal Japan. As the kami descend from the heavens to reshape the land in their image, it's up to each player to lead their clan to victory. Use politics to further your cause, negotiate to seek the most profitable alliances, worship the kami to gain their favor, recruit monsters out of legend to bolster your forces, and use resources wisely to be victorious in battle.
Oh, it's so good, Robert. It's so good. It's so victorious is exactly what this game is.
So tell me, how do you play this game? Besides having a board with tons of giantly cool miniatures on it, because I've seen several people post that. And darn it, people, paint your stuff, because that would look amazing. Oh, it'll look amazing.
The minis are yes, they're... Let's get that out of the way right now. The minis are beautiful. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But they are not the main course of this game, not by any stretch of the imagination.
But there's a catfish Godzilla.
There is. And he is awesome.
Is he good? Is he really good?
I like him. I like him a lot. He fits my playstyle well.
What? Oh, okay, I'll have to talk about that later.
All right, so let's talk about Rising Sun. Let's talk about the way this works.
Okay.
To set up Rising Sun, you do a couple things. And these things are all important because they go directly into gameplay. Once you get the board out, you're going to randomly select 4 gods. Those go along the top of the game board. And what those are is there is a unit in the game that you can recruit. And when you recruit it, you don't necessarily need to put it on the board as area control, because the board is a giant map of Japan that you're trying to control. You mm-hmm. can also put these figures up on these gods. And whoever controls the most people on any of these gods at the end of specific units of time in the game, you get this bonus from this god. So, one example is that you may get maximum honor on the track, which we'll talk about in just a moment. Or another bonus in the game might be that you get 2 extra coins right before that you can spend during the game, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the second thing you do is you set up your honor track, and your honor track is based on which clan you have chosen to play. Now, the base game comes with 5 clans, and these clans are very wildly from each other. Every clan has a unique and special power that is theirs and theirs alone. A good example of that would be the Turtle Clan actually has strongholds, which is where you spawn figures, that are on the backs of turtles so they can walk around the map. Just like a unit.
But if I remember something one of our listeners told us about the game, because we had a conversation over on the Facebook group about it already, they have a limited number of those turtles, right?
Well, everybody can put out 4 strongholds, and all the Turtle Clan strongholds are turtles.
But he was talking about turtling with the Turtle Clan, and it kind of didn't work.
No, the Turtle Clan is all about moving around and grabbing territory as fast as possible.
That is ironic, and I like it.
Now, every clan that you choose has that unique power, and it's all balanced out by the amount of honor that you start with. And honor is important because honor breaks every single tie in the game, and ties in this game are inevitable. So on the left-hand side of the board, you're going to have this track, and it's the honor track. And whoever's on top has the most honor. And that starting honor is determined by looking at your clan's player screen, which has a bunch of information specifically about your clan on there.
And this is on the player-facing side of the screen, so everybody knows
yes.
what your starting honor is?
Yes.
Okay. Makes sense.
Now, The next thing you're going to do is you're going to start out by putting a couple of your dudes on the map. You get one stronghold to start out with, and you get a daimyo, which is like the head guy in charge, the leader of your clan. And they're immune to betrayal, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And you also get a bushi, and the bushi are the low end of your clan. They're just the foot soldiers, in a sense. So you have a presence on the board right away. The next thing you're going to do is you're going to lay out the war tokens. And the war tokens are randomly selected every time you play. There are 8 of them. These represent the provinces on the map. And unless you're playing with 6 players, you're not going to use all 8 of them every round. So there's some provinces that you may not have an opportunity to capture every single round. These are laid out in random order by shuffling, and their order actually does matter because they get resolved in that order. And there's a lot of things that can occur during the game, card effects, effects that you've purchased, the monsters themselves, etc., that can alter your force very rapidly and very wildly. And so sometimes the order that you resolve your battles will be very, very important. And that'll become more clear when we talk about battles, especially how money is used in battle. So remember that. Next, you put out a bunch of seasons cards, and there's a deck for each season that you play the game. The game plays out across basically a year, and you start out in spring, and you go from spring to summer, and then summer into autumn, and then finally the winter season is just a scoring phase, where you get a lot of your bonuses at the end of the game. Now, what's interesting about these decks is you make them up a little bit differently every time you play. There's a core set of cards that you will play with in every single time you play this game. But then you also choose a different support deck that you then fold into that deck. Now, there's no need to shuffle these cards. You just lay them out. And what happens is that at the beginning of that season, all those cards get flipped over so that everybody can look at them. And it becomes kind of a shop of sorts. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Then everybody gets the rest of their clan, which is a bunch of figures. You get 6 bushi, which are your foot soldiers. You get 3 shinto, which are kind of like the priests. And these are the only guys that can be placed on those shrines that we were talking about earlier. And then you get a daimyo, and the daimyo is your leader. And they're important because they cannot be betrayed. And the betray action is something that's very, very powerful in this game. We'll talk about that in just a moment. The game starts out with a tea ceremony at the beginning of every season. And what that is it's just a conversation between all the players, and it gives you an opportunity to form a temporary alliance with somebody else at the table. Now, why would you want to ally with somebody?
Probably so you don't get wrecked by the other people.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. It might be that you can work with them to let you control certain areas for a longer bit of time. But there's also a gameplay reason, and this is where things start to get really brilliant, and I'm really just impressed by this mechanic. Because after you form your alliances, you go into what's called the political mandate phase. And there's 10 political mandate tiles that get shuffled. And each player, starting with the first player, picks up the top 4, looks at them, chooses one, and then places that one tile down onto the board, face up so that everybody can see it. And that is the mandate for that round. Every single season of the game consists of 7 rounds of this political mandate, which means that you do not ever have to use the betray option. You always have other options.
Okay.
But you'll see why betrayal is so powerful in just a moment. The political mandates have a couple different flavors, and they come in little bursts. You'll do 3 political mandates, and then you have an opportunity to go see who is controlling the gods, because then you'll get to cash in on those bonuses. You'll do 2 more mandates, another god phase, and then finally 2 additional mandates, a final god phase, and then you move into basically figuring out what battles are going to occur this season and how they get resolved. The political mandates come in a couple different flavors. There is recruit. Recruit's very straightforward. It lets you basically place more of your figures on the board, making your armor larger. It's basically a summon, right? So if you have 3 strongholds on the map, then you get to summon up 3 different figures. Now, here's the interesting thing about political mandates. At the bottom of each of these political mandates, in their description, you'll see an additional line that says you and your ally. And that's because whoever chooses that mandate and anybody they're allied with gets an extra bonus that the rest of the players at the table don't get, even though every single player at the table will execute on that mandate.
Okay.
So that's why alliances are so very, very important. For instance, on the recruit, you get to summon an additional figure. So if you had three strongholds on the board, you actually get to summon a fourth figure.
And this is going back and showing its, because this is supposed to be a la like a reimagining of diplomacy almost. So this is that diplomacy phase.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Let's talk about the other political mandates real quick. The next one up is Marshal. Marshal lets you move your figures around the board. And that's basically all going to be based on strategy. There's basically two moves that you can make. You can either jump over a dotted line border from one province to the next, or you can take a shipping route, which is just like a dotted line border, and it lets you move from one province to the next, except that province might be across the map. And you can choose to move any number of your figures, and you can even choose not to move them. Now, if you are the current player or the ally of the current player, there is a secondary function in marshaling, and that's actually the only way that you can build more strongholds. You can play three coins, and you can build an additional stronghold when you marshal. Next up, there's Train. Train actually lets you buy those Seasons cards. And those Seasons cards come in a variety of different flavors. There are Virtues. Virtues are basically buffs that you get. Most of them that I've seen so far revolve around getting additional victory points for satisfying a condition in the game. And those are constant buffs. So once you have them, you can keep cashing in on them if you can keep making that condition happen. There are upgrades that you can give to different characters, like you can increase the force of your daimyo. And force is important because the total force is how you control different provinces or control the temple of one of the gods, etc., right? So adding force to one unit makes that unit more powerful, makes it more able to hold ground a little bit better. And another one of the things that you can buy, of course, are the Onis, which are the giant, giant monsters. And each of them comes with some really interesting rules. For instance, the Golden Lion, the Komainu, I believe it's called, it actually counts as a Shinto, which means that you can actually put it up in the shrines. And this is something I did to pretty great effect in the last game I played. I had him up there, which basically gave me four characters to control shrines with, not just three. And that let me kind of be a bully and control the shrine that I wanted to control because I knew that nobody could ever outrank me.
I mean, just even looking over this rulebook, I'm seeing just a ton of options.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm barely touching upon the options.
Yeah.
And if you choose the Train option, the current player and their ally actually have to pay one coin less, so you can get a lot of buffs for a lot less expensive. Next up on the mandates is Harvest. And Harvest is kind of cool because every single province in the game has a printed value on it. Like it could be four victory points. Or it could be a victory point, a coin, and a Ronin. Ronin come into play during battle. We'll talk about them in a little bit. But they're represented by tokens. And when you harvest, everybody gets a coin. But whoever is the current player and their ally, they get to also harvest the value of any province that they are directly in control of. And you control a province, again, by having the most force. Most figures in the game count as one force, right? Including a lot of the monsters. Some, obviously, are are buffed up. Like the Water Dragon, for instance, counts as five force, which makes him really strong.
What does Godzilla count as?
Oh, I can't remember off the top of my head.
Not at all Godzilla. Okay.
Not at all Godzilla. Copyright. Harvesting is where your control of the map really starts to come into play, because anything that you're in control of when the harvest mandate is chosen, you get to cash in on in a big way. And these rewards are very, very attractive, so it behooves you to get them.
If you're allied with somebody and harvest comes up, can you harvest stuff from territories they control or just you?
No, just you. And then finally, the last mandate that we can talk about is the betrayal mandate. If you betray somebody, or if you choose the betray option and you're not allied with anybody, any alliances that you do have are instantly broken. But the betrayal is so powerful because, A, you're the only person at the table that gets to cash in on it. Unlike the other political mandates, nobody else can touch this one, only the person that plays it. And what you do is you take two figures off the board, one from two different clans, and you replace it with two of your own. So it's a huge, huge shift in the power spectrum.
I like it.
So those are the political mandates. You go through, like I said, seven rounds of this every season. And when you get to the end, it is now time for war. And war is handled in a very interesting manner. So in the war phase, you are going to look at the provinces in the order that you put them out in those tiles. And you're going to start at the top of the list and work your way down. If you are the only person in that province, you get the tile, and the tile is worth bonus points at the end. And there's even a set collection of those tiles that's worth big bonus points at the end. Okay? So it behooves you to have a wide variety of these tiles. So you get the tile without a fight. No biggie, and you don't lose any figures. If you and your ally are in a province, the province goes to whoever has the most force there. And if you have the identical level of force, whoever has the highest honor will then win that. Now, because you're allies, there's no fight. You do not fight. Nobody loses guys. And you don't do a battle. You just resolve it. Now, if you battle, however, you don't have to worry about who has the most force at the beginning of the fight. It's who has the most force at the end that's important. And the battle phase is one of the most interesting mechanics in this game. You have a little player aid in front of you that talks about the political mandates. And during battle, you actually flip that sucker over. And what you're going to find is that there are a couple different steps that you go through on battle. There's seppuku, where you basically can, if you want to, kill as many of your own figures as you want. And you get victory points for that. You can take a hostage, which involves removing a figure from the map, from the character that you are battling, and you actually get to steal one of their victory points at the same time because you've taken their hostage. And at the end of the season, you can hand their hostage back, but you get an extra coin as ransom money, which is awesome. There's higher Ronin, which if you've earned any of those Ronin tokens that I was talking about earlier, you can bring them into play now, but it does cost you money. And finally, there is Imperial Poets. And Imperial Poets is basically you get points for every figure killed in this battle. Now, you have all these laid out in front of you, and they are resolved in order from left to right, in the same order that I just described them in. And what each player does is behind their screen, they take all their coins. Now, the vast majority of this game is public knowledge. So you keep your coins on the front of your player screen. You keep all your monsters and your guys in the front of your player screen. But during battle, you take that stack of coins and you take it behind the screen. And the first thing you do is you tell the other person, I have this many coins and I have this many Ronin. And then you guys go into battle. And the first stage of the battle is you are basically betting on the different segments of the battle to see who puts down the most money. Because whoever wins that segment of the battle gets to execute on that basically that action. So let's say you and I are battling. We both put down coins. We show them off simultaneously. And I have 3 coins on seppuku and you have 4. Well, guess what? You won seppuku, so you get to choose whether or not you kill your figures.
Okay.
Now, here's why it's important that they're resolved in order. Let's say on the next one, take hostage, I had put 5 coins down and you had put 0 coins. But what if you kill all your guys during seppuku? All those coins are gone. So it's risk versus reward.
Okay.
And after you resolve all this stuff from left to right, you calculate the total force left on the space of those two players, and whoever has the most force, quote-unquote, wins the battle. Here's the cool part. If you lose the battle, any coins that your opponent had put onto that betting board go to you. That's your war reparations. So if you've got somebody that's trying to bully you around by having a lot of coins, guess what? If you battle them again later at a different province, you're going to have all those coins. So once you resolve all of the provinces that are listed in those tiles, you move on to the next season. You put down a fresh deck of season cards. Honor is never touched during the game unless something affects it. Like if you betray somebody, you lose honor. So those honor tokens are constantly shifting on that track, but you never ever reset it. It starts based on what's on your player screen, and then for the duration of the game, it's going to be manipulated by your actions on the board.
Okay, makes sense.
You put out the next deck of tiles for the provinces to determine where the battles are going to happen. Everybody gets to take their Shintos back from the temples, and you can go through all that again. And then you do the exact same steps in the next season, starting with a tea ceremony. And that's how you play the game. It's that simple.
All right, and then the final step is the end game where you tally everything up.
Yes, when you get to the winter phase, you tally everything up. You are tracking victory points throughout the game because, like, let's say you control Kansai and you get three victory points, you would just instantly tally those. But now you can start to look at all your bonuses, the tiles that you've won based in battles, any bonuses that you get from set collection, any bonuses that you get from cards that you have purchased from the season cards. And everything comes together, and whoever has the most victory points at the end wins. And if there's a tie, just like everything else in the game, all ties are broken by who has the most honor. Robert, this game is amazing. It's absolutely mind-bogglingly amazing. It is so much fun.
So let me ask you a question. How long does this game take to play once you got it down?
Once you got it down, 90 minutes to 2 hours for four players. Less than a half hour per player.
Now, would the sort of screw your opponent potential, which this game's based off of diplomacy, and I've seen games of diplomacy last way too long. So the fact that they got it pared down here is a good sign. Do you think it has as much, you know, kind of betrayal and stab the back and alliances, but it's like, oh, I actually screwed you. Does it have that level of stuff going on?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It can. It just depends on the players, and it depends on how they view the situation. I'll give you a perfect example. The second game of this I played was with Dale Cohen and April. Dale and Cohen were allied in the last season of the game where you go through all the steps, and they quite cleverly had removed the ability to recruit new troops. They had burned both of those tiles. The reason this is important is because April and I had both suffered losses in the battles of the previous season, which means that we were both figure depleted on the board. We were not able to control very much of it at all. So I leaned over to April and I whispered in her ear and I'm like, hey, let's do a double betrayal. That's going to completely change the dynamics on the board, and it's the only way that we can get guys out on the board. So her turn came up. She played the betrayal. She removed one of Dale's figures, one of Cohen's figures. Boom. I went next. I did the betrayal, did the whole thing again, and all of a sudden we're almost balanced on figures on the board.
Nice.
So I worked with my opponent because we both knew it was the maximum return for us in that moment, even though we were both trying to win the game. It was the best that we could do at that second. So I guess I'll just kind of summarize all that by saying every group's dynamics are going to be different. And I think that the deeper a relationship you have with the people that you play is going to make people a little more willing to take dramatic steps like that. And I think that only is going to get better with people that you know better, if that makes sense.
It's a game about diplomacy and betrayal, so...
Yeah, and I always like to start with that when I'm describing the game to people, because I want them to know you can't take this seriously because you may hate somebody by the end of this game.
It wouldn't be based on diplomacy if you didn't.
Yeah, exactly. Or as I like to call it, winning the game and losing everyone you know.
All right, Jonathan, I think we're at that point. So how is the rule book?
The rule book is great, actually. The rule book's very straightforward. I mean, like, at its core, the game's basic mechanics are very straightforward and very easy. I mean, did you have any major questions when I was just describing it to you?
No, just a little nitpicky stuff.
Yeah, but... exactly. And a lot of that stuff will kind of wash out in your first run, right? The game is incredibly easy to learn, and the rulebook does a good job of teaching it to you. Where this game's depth comes in is in gameplay and in modifiers, and frankly, in how clever the people that are playing it are. That's where the depth comes.
And we mentioned the miniatures earlier, but how are the...
Oh, but it's not just the miniatures, Robert. This whole production is just off the charts. All of the colors in this game are bold and beautiful. This is one of the prettiest, brightest boards I've ever put down on the table. It's just gorgeous. Pictures do not do it justice. This game has such amazing tabletop presence. It's absolutely epically beautiful.
Hey, Jonathan.
Yeah.
You want to know how you could, like, quadruple that board presence? You should paint your minis.
If I can get the time, I would gladly, because these minis are gorgeous.
Yeah, I'm sad I moved away. I really wanted to paint Not At All Godzilla.
I'm tempted to FedEx him to you.
Lord knows I've got enough packing peanuts right now that I could ship it back pretty easy.
But yeah, no, this entire production is just off the charts. Every aspect of this game is beautiful and well laid out and easy to read. And everybody that I've taught the game, I've taught it to them in less than 15 minutes, and nobody has had any major issues. People just get it. It works. It's not a difficult game to learn, but there is so much to master.
So speaking of learning and mastery, is there anything off in the execution of this? Or because I see there's already an FAQ on their website about stuff. Is there anything that isn't explained well? Or
not that I was able to see. Everything was extremely straightforward to me. I didn't see anything that really jumped out at me as questionable. It's just well done. It's well done and well executed and well designed.
And then what would you say is the recommended player count for this game?
Now, they suggest at least three. It's a 3 to 5 player game in the base box, and if you buy one of the expansions, you can go up to 6 players. 6 players is the maximum. I would say that you want 4 players at bare minimum. And the reason why is because not having the opportunity to ally with somebody could put you in a really bad situation, especially if you never have an ally the entire game. So odd numbers, I don't know, work as well. I've only ever played it with even numbers, and inevitably everybody ends up pairing up every season because the rewards are just too great. You are encouraged to do it.
Okay.
But that being said, you know, I don't know. It would work at 3, but 4 is pretty beautiful. And I would bet that 6 is amazing.
Yeah, you know, and honestly 5, because especially if every round someone's not going to be paired up, at 5, you have an opportunity to kind of see who's sort of in the lead based off of the public information. And then those not in the lead can pair up.
Yeah, you can totally ostracize them.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's one of those things that, yeah, I think you need at least 4, though.
One of the coolest things about the game is that they're always reminding you in the rulebook that at any time, and there are a couple of exceptions, but for the vast majority of the game, you are encouraged to constantly be negotiating. Oh, you know, yeah, we're allied, but you want me to take that political mandate that you want? Okay, cool, give me 4 coins.
By the way, I've mentioned the board game Diplomacy a couple times. This goes way, way back to when we first covered the Rising Sun Kickstarter. Eric Lang himself said Blood Rage was his, you know, riff off of the game Risk, and this game was his riff off the game Diplomacy. And so when I'm saying this reminds me of Diplomacy or whatever, I'm comparing it to it. It's a direct comparison. He was trying to kind of channel everything that is good about Diplomacy, but get rid of probably the 7 to 10 days it actually takes to finish.
Well, I will say this because I've seen a lot of this on the internet, a lot of comparisons to Blood Rage. This is not Blood Rage. This is Rising Sun. Blood Rage rewards aggression to the extreme, right?
Wait. A game based on Risk rewards aggression. No way.
Yeah. Rising Sun rewards patience, communication, and the ability to read and manipulate a situation to your best. And that example I gave of April and I doing a double betrayal to rapidly change the dynamics of power on the board almost swung the game. And that was all because of a conversation, not because of a specific action in the game. And the best part is there's no dice, there's no luck involved. You know exactly where you sit at any given time because you can look at the honor track. You know exactly where you sit in the player order based on where you're sitting at the table. You can count out and you can plan moves well ahead of time. I mean, like, this game is just sublime. I love this game. It's easily in my top 5. It's that good.
It sounds like we don't even need to ask the next question, you know, is it fun to play? Because obviously you hated it based off of how much you're gushing.
Yeah.
You know what I gotta say, Jonathan? You gotta stop getting good games because I'm only gonna be out there for a couple of days in September, man. I don't have time to play everything.
This is one that we prioritize, without a doubt.
We said that about Century Silk Road, man.
Yeah, but here's the thing. We can play both of these back to back and be done, and it will only have been 2 hours, 2.5 hours.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair.
These games do not drag. They're both liquid quick. And I, as much as I love Century Silk Road, and it's a great game, this is the game I think about deep into the night. I analyze every single decision I made in the last game I played, and I'm constantly wondering, how could I have done that better? How could I have manipulated that situation better? Who should I have allied with? It's a game that gets you thinking, and you don't stop thinking about it. And that's a remarkable achievement. All right, so that is Rising Sun from Cool Mini or Not. We were talking about the Kickstarter version of the game. The retail version of the game will be out very, very, very soon. They're very similar. There's no big gameplay differences. And in fact, in preparation for this review, I didn't even touch the Kickstarter stuff. The only Kickstarter components that I used were just blinging out the game.
And I'll say this, one of the local game stores around here definitely bought in on the Kickstarter because they're already selling it. So,
yeah.
If check your FLGS, you might be able to find yourself a copy of the Kickstarter version floating around,
too. And frankly, go out of your way to find it because this game's just brilliant in every way, shape, and form. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode of the Forgot My Dice podcast. I cannot believe that we are getting this close to 40 on the episode numbers.
Is that the point where we have to re-examine our podcast critically and buy a fast car?
No, I'm just going to use the Patreon money to buy a Porsche and make bad decisions for 3 years. I just hope that you don't leave me for a younger, more handsome podcast host.
I cannot think of a rebuttal to that that would fit in the context of a family podcast. So I will bow out gracefully and say good, well played. Apparently I chose wisely because you're dying.
Yeah, I'm dying. God, I hate allergies.
And my plan comes to fruition.
Well, that brings us to the end of another episode, which of course means, Robert, once more, it is time for your closing thoughts.
My closing thoughts of randomness. I should think about these for the entire time, and I just don't. It didn't happen today. Is this more flu afterglow or what?
I think it's the flu afterglow mounted on allergies. It's the double whammy.
I will remind you that Austin always ranks in the top 20 of the most allergen awful cities in America, and every list I ever see, Portland is number 100.
It was 75 today, and you had snow.
No, we did not have snow, sir.
Not today.
It was
like what, 3 days ago?
It happens. It's winter. Don't mock my seasons, sir. They're quite interesting. It's fun. I've never lived in a place that had actual seasons before.
Well, any final thoughts, Robert?
I think that was my final thought, sir. I think trying to kill you and then talking crap on Austin was final thoughts enough.
Well, then I guess it's time to remind everybody out there that we do have all of our digital domains open to you to join us in the conversation beyond the show. Facebook group is definitely the one that's kicking the most right now. Go take a look. But we are, of course, available on Twitter, Pinterest, pretty much everything under the sun.
Yep. And starting next week, March, is when I'm going to start putting my thumb on you to try to figure out how we're going to do Bright.
I'm down.
Yeah,
I'm down.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no, I'm gonna push the schedule that. But I'm waiting until March. I'm gonna try to get another viewing in of that movie and write down some jokes.
Well then, until then, Robert, party on.
Party on, Jonathan.
The music you heard in this podcast was Intro by Elefio and Retro Funk by Persephone, both used with permission via the Creative Commons license.